And Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across me, surprisingly in good shape, RJ in command and control in his literally chromed and gold-gilded tower of power. So, anyway, we had the memorial for my dad last night at the bait shop, and I will tell you, if you want to have a successful gathering, first call Luigi's. I mean, call Dave up there at Luigi's and say, okay, I got this many people coming, make some food.
Right.
Yeah, that's...
That went very well. It was a great food, too.
Yeah, and I mean, it's nice and easy. They come, they put up all the things, and they light everything up, and then when it's over, the guy shows up, and, you know, you take everything down, and boom, easy, Luigi's, man. If you're having a get-together... And, you know, whether it's something, you know, a little sad like my dad's memorial or, you know, like a Christmas party or whatever, got to say props to Dave. That was literally amazing. We had a lot of interesting folks there last night, from fishing tackle manufacturers and reps to people. I would say the number one thing that went on last night was, boy, I haven't seen that person in 10 years.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
That seems to be the amazing part of everything. And then Sean over at Soundworks, my old golf cart that was just beat up, messed up, nasty. I was getting ready to junk it. And all of a sudden it showed up new. Looks like military. I want to know where the button is to make the guns come out of the top. You know, so
they did an amazing job.
Yeah, it's
that.
An incredible golf cart now, yeah.
So, Soundworks. They're right next to Fish and Frank's. That was very nice of them. But thank you, everybody, for, you know, who came or sent their wishes or, you know, for your thoughts and stuff like that. That was very nice of everybody. You know, there is a lot of fish out there that the bag limit's like 100 pounds.
Right.
We were literally just talking about that right before we started the show. And RJ brought up cobia. And what was the cobia record?
130 pounds.
Yeah, 130 pounds.
Let me look that back up again.
And you're only allowed one per person or two per boat.
Per boat, yeah.
So if you've got one person in a boat, you get one. Two people, you get two. Three people, you get two. You know, yeah. You only have two on a boat, period.
130 pounds, 1 ounce is the record.
Yeah, so if you catch a 130-pounder, you might as well just call yourself last. Yes. You've got to have one more ounce.
That's right.
130, one and 2 ounces.
And 2 ounces, yeah, right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shove a sinker down its throat and then weigh it. Yeah.
What they used to do in the tournaments, everybody thinks they would put batteries and lead weights in fish, you know, to make them heavier during the tournaments. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely not true. There's probably nobody's ever been, maybe once in the history of a tournament, you know, a weight tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Ice cubes are what people use.
Ice cubes.
You can push the ice cubes down fish's throat and build up that weight. You get a lot of weight in there because as you're putting the ice cubes down there, they're melting and turning to water. And so there's no evidence except a very cold belly. But ice cubes are what people use to put weight on their fish because you can't prove there's nothing but cold water in there. So a little tournament trivia history.
Yeah, yeah.
So
don't do this at home, boys and girls.
No. But that's why I don't do tournaments anymore either. Let's see. The leather jackets.
Yes.
Leather jackets. Now, that is a 100-pound bag limit and decidedly poor eating. And locally, we call them skipjacks. It's a, I would kind of say, not oval, but pointed oval. Kind of looks like a Jesus fish.
Yeah, it actually resembles more like a little tiny, skinny, anorexic Jack Crevel to me.
Yes.
Yeah, bright yellow tail, very silver looking. Leather Jacket is the name if you look it up. If you hear about them locally, though, in Southwest Florida, they're called skipjacks. But if you look up skipjack, it's a different fish. So the Leather Jacket, the one thing about them is not good bait, and there's really no reason to keep one I can think of.
I've caught snook and tarpon on them.
Yeah?
Yeah, but I don't like handling them to put the hook in them.
Well, I've never really caught much with them, and I don't even bother to mess with them. And the problem is they have these little spikes in their belly and their dorsal, and when you go to grab them, it's like getting bee stung. And, I mean, they will light you up.
It'll last for a couple, 2 or 3 days sometimes if they hammer you just right.
Yeah.
I've only had it for minutes at a time, but, boy, that's a few okay minutes.
Yeah.
You know, wow, that one was, that hurt.
Yeah, that's not fun at all.
So you really carefully, if you're putting skipjacks in the water, you know, thumb and two fingers on one side, each side of the head, and just pick them up, flip them back in the water, or try and grab them right by the tail and throw them in the water. But if you get anywhere near their belly or their back, they got little spikes there, and they've got some kind of venom on it that it burns. It really lights you up.
Yeah, it's an amazing evolution for that type of fish too, to develop a venom and a spine on the back of them.
See, and that's why I don't think they're good bait. Now, Robert's caught fish with them, and people say, oh, you put a hook in that fish. Well, they eat skipjacks.
Right. They eat skipjacks.
They eat stingrays. You know, I'm sorry. You know, I just don't get that. What was the other one? Oh, slippery dicks.
Slippery dicks. I can't believe we're saying this on the air, but yep.
But
yep.
It's the name of a fish. It's
it is
not
the name of a fish.
It's not a naughty connotation. It's just the name of a fish, and it's actually called a slippery dick. And I have no idea how it got its name.
And the bag limit is 100 pounds.
The problem is, we thought we had a bunch of them. We were going to sell them at the store. And it turned out in Charlotte Harbor, they are not slippery dicks. They're actually striped parrotfish. Wasn't that it?
Puddin' wives. Puddin' wives was one of them, and then the other one was the green wrasse.
Yeah, but they were... Some of the ones we had were striped parrotfish.
Is that what they were?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, they weren't slippery dicks.
I never heard the final discussion on it. I knew they weren't slippery dicks, no.
And so we had got some, put them in the bait tank, and before you go to sell anything, you always have to make sure what it is you're buying and selling. I mean, I wouldn't want to lose the bait shop because, well, this is what we thought we were, and the Marine Patrol comes in, checks your tanks, and goes, what are you doing with that? It's illegal to have, you mm-hmm. know. Yeah. You know,
and it's per fish to find, right?
Right.
And you got a tank full of them.
It was legal to have these, but it was illegal to sell them.
Ah.
So some of the fish, it's perfectly legal to have, but they're not legal to buy or sell. And so that was the difference with those. But we had to double check, and it was Josh Olive who finally came up with the final word on what they were. But it's a lot of looking around. Now, you said you found an app that...
Yeah, it's called Fish Verify, and you can get it for your iPad and you can get it for your Android. And it's an interesting app because you can search for fish. You can actually take a picture of your fish, and it'll help you identify it.
Okay.
And it's got all the regulations. So if you catch a fish and you know what it is, you can then pull up the regulations on that fish. And it's time current, so it'll tell you if the season is open at the moment, what the bag limits are, and so on and so forth. I've had a number of apps over the years, and I really like this one because it's easy to use.
So Fish Verify.
Fish Verify.
All right. For all you cell phone folks, the problem is I usually have the rulers with the rules on it, or the stickers, or the paper. Problem is, they change the rules so fast nowadays. It used to be they changed it whenever they wanted. They made a law saying they can only change it once a year. They amended it to twice a year. And now they amended it back to they do whatever they want, whenever they want. So as often as they want to do it, they change the rules on us. You have Droopy Mike syndrome there, my friend.
I do.
Yes, you do. And Droopy Mike is annoying. So,
not as
just watch late night TV. I'm sure there's a pill for that now.
Yes, yeah. I'm sure there is.
It's not as annoying as the rules that they change all the time. And speaking of the rules, too, is today's the last day of Amberjack. Amberjack season closes today at midnight.
So today's your last day to get Amberjack for a while.
Yep.
We have an extra weekend of Red Snapper.
Yes.
So the first weekend in November, you can catch Red Snapper. Problem is, I think they're predicting storms for this weekend.
Are they?
I think Saturday's supposed to be rainy, stormy.
Oh, yeah, great. Again.
Is it? You know, I could be wrong. And I mean,
it wouldn't surprise me.
I went past the Weather Channel today. I get way over the Weather Channel. I use my phone nowadays.
Yeah,
but I was flipping through and happened to catch local on the 8s. And
it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, but the fishing, if you can get out there, has been pretty decent offshore.
I would have to say Pompano, this is one of the better months we've ever had on Pompano.
Yeah, yeah. The weird part about it is it's just so hard to predict where they're at. You know, you get into them and they're a very much a schooling fish, so it's usually if you catch one, you catch sometimes up to a couple dozen. And then other times they're just kind of like jacks that show up for a minute and then they're gone and boogieing again. I've been hearing of some 20-inch pompano being caught.
All right, here's the question for you guys. Now, not pompano jigs, not crazy jigs. Those are the two most obvious ones to use for pompano. The silly jig, crazy jig thing, banana jig, same thing, three or four different names. And the other one is a regular pompano jig, which is usually a fairly heavy lead head with very short bucktail or mylar on it, and, you know, with a hook.
Right.
Little jig. If excluding those, what do you think you could either cast or troll to catch a pompano? Anybody got anything? You want me to start?
Yeah, I'll let you start.
Beetle spin.
There you go. That's
I'm thinking, to me, if I was either going to cast or troll something slow, like idle speed or less with a boat, like maybe even with a trolling motor, an old crappie beetle spin. You know, not the tiny size, but a little bit bigger.
Right.
But I think with that blade spinning, getting the flash, and that little rubber, you know, twin tail body below it, I'm thinking a beetle spin would just be an amazing crappie jig or crappie bait or a pompano bait.
Yeah.
I know it's a great crappie jig, so I'm getting confused here.
No,
I had a rough night. Somebody was imbibing me with alcohol, and I was doing really good until Jackie at the end of the night. Oh, I got to have a shot, say goodbye to Frank. And there was a couple of those too many.
Yeah. Well, you associate it with fresh water because it is traditionally a freshwater bait, so it's very easy to get that confused. It's just like talking about jitterbugs.
Well, I'm just confused anyway, but I'm thinking beetle spin would be a great pompano bait. I just don't know why, but that flashed into my head. It's something we got to try.
Yeah.
RJ, anything you can think of?
I would use a Johnson Silver Minnow with a little mylar tail on it.
All right, the single hook Johnson.
Single hook Johnson.
Eighth or 16th ounce.
Small. Definitely on the small size.
And okay. Now you want to put a teaser off the back?
I put a teaser on the back of it.
Now, if I was going to do a teaser on that, I wouldn't use mylar. I would use fish bites.
Well, yeah, fish bites is a good idea, too.
What I would do is even like their little triangle, and I'd take a pair of scissors, get it on, put it on the hook, and then I'd take a pair of scissors and slice as many little slices in that little triangle as I could get. You know, cut it up. And, you know, I guess it'd be easier before you put it on the hook. But I would take the scissors up and try and get that to act more like your mylar, where it's,
skirt.
As many cuts as I could get in it to make like a skirt. But it would be that little triangle of fish food, you know, fish bites.
I like that idea.
Yeah, get the scent out in the water behind it.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, it would be either sand flea or maybe bloodworm or something like that. Right. I don't know if I would go with the shrimp or the squid or the crab, but I would go more something that the pompano would go down on the bottom to chew on. You know, good scent they like.
I like that. That's a
now,
pretty good
you
idea.
Would go with the mylar, but I mean, well, as soon as you started talking teaser, I'm thinking, boy, if I chopped up some fish bites, I could really get a good teaser out of that.
Yeah, I was going to say the fish bites is probably the better idea. My thought on the mylar was the Johnson Silver Minnow, I love the lure, but it runs with its belly down.
Right.
Mostly. It doesn't really spin.
Unless you go too fast.
Unless you go too fast, and any lure is going to do that. Any spoon is going to do that. But if you're going at normal speed, it kind of runs with its belly down, so you don't get a lot of side flash on it. You know, it's a good lure if you're over the top of the fish. So sticking the mylar on it gets you flash all around.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. No, I'm going to go along with that.
Yeah, I like that idea. That's a pretty good concept.
So do you have something we can make fun of, Robert?
Probably all of it.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
Honestly, right.
Locked, loaded.
I'm going to probably try, like, that little,
Yeah, I know what it is, exactly.
The little crawdad. Like a little rattle trap in the crawdad color.
Oh, the tiny trap.
The tiny trap.
And that red, kind of orange, black pattern.
Yeah. I think I would try
Interesting.
That.
Interesting.
Yeah, the sound, it could be a big deal.
Well, and because they vary so much in the water depth, because sometimes they're up in 2 feet of water right along the surf line out on the beaches, and other times they're in 3 or 4 feet of water outside of the bar. And that one, you'd be able to cover some ground with it. I would use some Procure scent on the side of it just for added attractant. But, I mean, I think that little tiny trap might be a key because I know guys have caught them on paddle tails on occasion or even live white bait once in a while. But I think they might hit something that looks like a little bit of a shrimp slash crab imitation.
Yeah, I'm not going to say no because I use that same crawdad pattern on the half-ounce and quarter-ounce rattle traps for snook.
Right.
If I'm around, like, say, the 41 bridge, I-75 bridge, the trestle on the Caloosahatchee, even the 41 bridge down on the Caloosahatchee, I-75 bridge in the Caloosahatchee, quarter to half-ounce rattle trap crawdad colors is one of my favorite snook lures up there.
Right.
So knowing I do so well with the crawdad colors on the snook and the tiny trap, you know, you've got the half ounce, the quarter ounce, and they get that little crappie size.
Little
you
tiny,
know,
tiny guy.
Tiny, tiny, and that's almost perfect for a pompano.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to say that wasn't bad.
Well, all of those should work well. They should be in your tackle box, and depending on the conditions.
Well, you know, we get a lot of people listen up north. And the problem is they sell their rods and reels, they sell their tackle, they give it to their buddies, they get rid of boats, they do all these things before they come down here. And like I always say, God bless you, we love having you in Florida. I'm a transplant, you know, you're welcome to be here. But a couple general rules of thumb, before you get rid of a bunch of stuff, you can call and ask us questions at the bait shop, 941-625-3888, 625-3888, 941. But we find so many people that get rid of amazing stuff that we're going to sell the exact same thing to them again. And it might have been a bass lure or whatever, but they don't get to hear it until they already get down here. And then they're spending a lot of extra money, which I thank you for. I appreciate it. I thank you. My kids thank you. My creditors thank you. But, you know, really we would much rather you just saved your stuff. You already know it. But don't get rid of a bunch of stuff because you're coming to Florida, because it might be the best thing that ever happened here. And, well, as you just heard, we were sitting around talking about pompano, and now RJ with the Johnson Minnow, the single hook spoon, that is a saltwater bait. But both Robert and I pick freshwater baits for the pompano. So, and yours is a crossover. Yours is half fresh water, half salt water, I would say, RJ. So, you know, it's really weird. Don't get rid of your stuff until you ask some of us about it. Now, we love it when you buy new stuff because we make money on it, but, you know, it's not always so. No. Next one is a lot of mackerel around the area this year. This is one of our best years on Spanish mackerel. The Pompano are great, but, man, there's a lot of Spanish.
Yeah, I can't. I honestly can't reflect on years past where it's been better than this, especially for the fall time. And size-wise, so it's not just quantity, but the quality has been there. I mean, several fish have been in that 24, 25-inch range where I had to really look at their picture to make sure it wasn't a Ciro mackerel, which is a very common mackerel on the other coast. You know, and we used to have a lot of them here years ago, but they've thinned out for some reason. But they're catching them from Cape Hayes out through the pass, out to 20 miles. Guys are catching them from the beaches at Placida, Sharkies, the jetties up there in Venice. I mean, all the way down to as far as what I've had a couple reports on was Fort Myers Beach down there off the pier. So they're kind of scattered throughout the whole coast here. And I haven't had a report off at Tampa Bay in 2 weeks, but 2 weeks ago they were catching them up there too. So it's been unbelievable. And guys are catching them trolling and casting.
Or just with bait under a bobber. Put a shrimp under a bobber. You can put bait fish free-lined out. But when I'm doing Spanish mackerel, I like being under a float. It's almost like sea trout fishing, you know, where I have the bobber out and I'm popping the bobber for them, getting a little splash, a little noise. But it's amazing how much mackerel you can catch with simple popping cork rig.
Yeah.
But the only difference I do when I'm fishing for Spanish mackerel, I use the old Mustad wide gap hooks. And for me, under a bobber, that's going to be the hook, whether I'm doing trout or Spanish mackerel. It's a 37-140 or 37-141. But these hooks are a wide gap Cayley hook. And I put the shrimp in one side of the head and out the other, so he's hanging on there. And 99.9% of the time, better than a circle hook, it hooks in the corner of the mouth. And it's just always there. Every once in every 10 years, I might get it where it's hooked somewhere else besides the corner of the mouth. It's just an amazing hook. And they're one of the least expensive hooks you can buy.
Oh, yeah.
Just because you're paying $12 for 7 hooks doesn't mean they're the best hook ever made. They're probably really sharp and they're really good, but sometimes that old $1.50, $2 pack of hooks, and for this instance, that's what I want. I want to go back to that inexpensive, good hook that actually works.
Since there's so many mackerel around, you talked about this one show previously. You catch a mackerel, what do you do? It's really important. Otherwise, they taste like shoe leather.
Oh, I put them in ice water.
Immediately, right?
Immediately.
Yeah. Well, you have to. I mean, what it does is basically you're putting them into a hypothermic state and you're drawing that blood and oil away from their muscle tissue and totally changes the flavor to the better.
To the better, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And as long as you don't freeze them, as long as you eat them that night, it's wonderful fish.
Yeah.
Triple tail. I mean, literally the best fall season for triple tail ever.
Starting to be.
I talked to Dr. Spatafora last night. He was stopped by to say hi, and I got to get him out triple tail fishing. Community Ice Center, that's Joe Spatafora's place. One of the most brilliant doctors on earth. I mean, the guy is absolutely brilliant. And his thing, I owe him a favor, so I got to take him triple tail fishing. Well, they showed up, and I've got to try and get him out here real quick.
There you go.
But the key to triple tail is it's hunting and fishing in a cross combination. And
that's a
keep
good
in mind,
I like
yeah,
that.
It is.
They really like shade. They want to lay up under something because we got a lot of bright sunshine. God, has it been hot?
Oh my gosh!
Yes. I got to tell you, if you're sitting up north thinking, "Well, maybe you know this is miserable. It's snowy. It's nasty, and everything," I guarantee you, come to Florida, that's going to change. Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
that you know, Tuesday we were working on the area trying to get ready. We got seminars starting here real quick, but the heat is unbelievable.
We've been having 100-degree days with 90-plus humidity.
Yeah, it's literally the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Been breaking some records the last, 3 days is either tied or broken it by a degree or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty surprising, you know. And the weird part is, notice yesterday...
Oh, Shimano's going to be November 5th and 6th at Fish and Frank. Shimano's coming. They were at Dad's service last night, Danny and some of the guys from Shimano. Thank you very much for attending, by the way. That was very nice of you. But it's going to be wheeling and dealing on Shimano stuff, which includes G. Loomis, and a couple of days of learning how to catch fish and having a good time there at seminar area at Fish and Frank's. This is one we do in-house right in the new seminar area. Triple Tail, cross-training between hunting and fishing. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, see if Danny can do a seminar in Triple Tail. One of the seminars they're going to do there, the 5th and 6th. But they like shade. They want to be under something. With all this bright sunshine, you know, they're going to be laid up under anything floating, a marker standing up, casting a shadow on the water, bridge abutments.
And coconut.
Coconut floating. What you doing, Robert?
Writing down a note because I got a call from Shimano to find out about reels because we're out of several.
Oh,
yesterday, well, I'm like, wait a minute. So
yeah, I know. I wasn't thinking about
Mental note for myself.
It'll be great. Yeah, come down and get up great prices on Shimano. Oh, we don't have any.
Right.
Okay. That would pretty much fit my bill.
It would.
Yeah.
That's what I had to write a note down on my hand to remember.
Okay. Anyway.
It's been a long week.
What's the diet on a triple tail? What do they like to eat?
Mostly crustaceans. They prefer crabs and shrimp, but they actually eat a lot of small fish. You know,
I would have never thought crabs and crustaceans. I don't know why, but triple tail, I always see them near the surface.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that didn't dawn on me at all. I don't know why.
Well, they hang out like around floating debris and sargassum grass. Which, like sargassum grass, pretty much is like the Amazon of the ocean, to put it in a weird way, because it holds all sorts of marine life, from baby sea turtles float on the mats, to seahorses, to all sorts of little tiny baby fish that got caught up in different currents, that got too far away from, say, an inland habitat and get dispersed out. And those triple tail hang out around those and kind of pick them off as they pop their heads out of the weeds. You know, so, and then you've got crabs, which truly float around everywhere in all sorts of bodies of water, but they usually like to cling on to something. So you're going to find crabs on a floating pallet, possibly a coconut. You know, it's you just never know where you're going to run into them. So that's kind of.
I wonder when we
sources.
Actually get out and start actually exploring space and not just looking at it. I wonder if there's creatures out there that like cling to asteroids and wander around through the galaxy or something. All these creatures on Earth that tend to cling to grass things floating on the ocean currents. You'd almost have to think, because they know stuff, bacteria and stuff survives in the vacuum of space.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's a bunch of little critters wandering around floating on asteroid debris. Okay,
I'm hungover. And what lure would you use?
Yeah, what lure would you use to catch them? I mean, I can see that, space fishing, the asteroid belt, you know? Okay.
Be interesting. You know, triple tail are just pretty fascinating, and they're found in all of the world's subtropical oceans. You know, so you can find them in the Indian Ocean, the Pacific, the Atlantic, you know, and their habits are pretty much identical everywhere you go.
Now, I've never caught a triple tail. What's the fight like with them?
You ever caught a crappie?
Yeah.
Figure almost the exact same fight as a crappie, except 10 times more.
Okay.
But they're built almost identical to them. You know, they've got the three big fins, the dorsal fin, the anal fin, and the tail, which make up those called triple tail, but that's what a crappie looks like.
Yeah.
And so if you've ever caught a crappie, say a pound and three quarter crappie, times 10.
And they hang out on their sides, don't they? They lay on their side most of the time?
Sometimes.
They'll lay on their sides.
Yeah, a few times I've seen them underwater, they were laying on their sides.
And the trick is look for an oily-looking rag. If you're actually looking for a fish laying there, you're never going to see one. Once you get it in your head, they look like an oily old shop rag, dirty rag.
Yeah.
And as soon as you get that in your head, you're going to go, oh, wow, there's a triple tail. Oh, look, there's one. But when you're looking for a fish, only 1 out of 100 actually looks or presents itself as looking like a fish.
Right, exactly. And the laying on their side thing, I'm not sure what that's about because I have seen it a couple different times on buoys. But the primary times when I've seen it is when it's just floating along by itself, just going with the tide. You know, I've seen that standing on the 41 bridge where they've just floated by out with the tide and they're laying completely on their side, but still alive. And then I've seen it a couple times while out tarpon fishing in the center of the harbor.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but we're going to call them the Jackie Gleason of fish, you know, just, you know, energetic, but really kind of lazy. Put me up in a chair and I'm good, Ralph.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and they're kind of prehistoric looking. They got a bunch of little tiny spikes around their gill. They got these giant keeled scales on them. But being similar to a crappie with the fight because they're such a wide fish and they'll turn themselves sideways. But the other part is they do occasionally do some pretty good cartwheels, you know, which is
always
awesome.
Oh, they jump out of the water and they'll do like, what do they call that? Dolphining, where they just jump out of the water.
Kind of greyhound.
Greyhounding, where they'll pop out of the water and go forward in an arc. They'll come up and literally just fall over in the air. They're very acrobatic aerial fish. You know, if you've got light enough line where you're not trying to horse them in. The more you horse a fish in, the less display you get. So if you really want an aerial battle with them. Now, I love fishing triple tail, but I do it with 6-pound mono. Or four, but 4 6-pound mono is how I like to fish them. 20 to 25 pound test, either floor or mono leader, and a little tiny number 4 hooks, because I'm using very, very small baits for them. Really tiny stuff. Now, Strike King has the best artificial lure for them. It's a twin tail. I don't even know the name of it. I don't remember. I know where it is in the store. When you go to the Strike King wall, go to the far end closest to my office, just about head high, a little bit higher, you'll see the white twin tail there. But they go nuts over that thing. And yeah. I wish I knew the name of it, I'd tell you. But it's a little striking.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it either.
It really works good. But for some reason, those little tails, they're one of the Rage series, so they got the little flat edge on them. So one's going up while the other one's going down, kind of walking, kicking, looking. And I've just seen them come 10 feet off a marker to get them.
Yeah.
And so as far as artificial goes, I would say that's number one. I throw small shrimp. You want them not huge, the size of your little finger to maybe your index finger at the largest. The great big shrimp are not what I'm going to throw at them. I'm going to throw much smaller ones, hence a number 4 hook. Not a 4/0, not a 4-0, a 4, which is smaller than a 2, but 2 is as big as I will go. But if I have white bait I'm going to go throw at them, I'm digging through to find the smallest ones I have in there. I'm not looking for the big ones. I want the smallest ones I have in there, 2-3 inches long.
And that makes very, very good sense, because, I mean, that's what most people caught them on. If they do catch them on any type of bait fish or artificial, it's always something under 3 inches, seems like.
They don't go after big baits. You know, you see this monster fish, it's 30 inches, and a 30-inch long triple tail is probably close to 20 inches tall. And you would think monster, you know, this is a big fish, you need a big bait, and it's just the opposite. You're more likely to catch them if you use something lighter. But I use the light monofilament to go after them pretty much because that's how I started. And in some ways I'm a little traditional, and I mean, if all I've got is braid, I'll throw it at them. I'm not, you know, stupid. I'm not like some of these guys go, I only fish this because I'm, you know, I'm this type of fisherman. Well, you're a butthead. you know, I only use this kind of reel or that kind of rod. Are you just plain idiots, you know? But it doesn't matter how you fish. It matters how you catch.
Right.
If you're out there having fun, now, in some instances, some guys just like playing with a rod and reel and whipping it around all day, and that's their idea of fun. Okay, God bless you. Good luck with that. But I like to catch fish. But if all I got is braid, I'll throw it. But my ideal circumstances, 7, 7.5 foot, 6 to 12 pound class rod, 4 to 10 is a little light. I can't control them. The problem with doing triple tail is a lot of times they're hanging around crab trap buoys.
Yeah.
So you've got this buoy floating on the surface, and for some reason they want to get their face up underneath it and kind of hide. It's like playing peekaboo with a little kid. You know, you cover their eyes, you're gone. It's magic. And they open their eyes, and you magically appear. Well, if they get their face up underneath that crab trap ball, they have no idea the rest of their body's sticking out of it. To them, they're well hid. I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, but they don't seem like the most brilliant fish, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're kind of a goofy species, but it's awesome to catch, wonderful to eat, but big, heavy scales. You're going to work at that fillet. Now, it is worth it, but I can remember one time, you know, my dad's close on my mind right now. We were out catching him, and he caught about a 28, 29-incher, and we were thinking, okay, this is going to be great. We'll have this for dinner, and it had been a long day. We'd probably been out like 9 or 10 hours. We're both looking at each other going, you feel like cleaning it? Nope. You feel like cleaning it? Nope. I think we're going to let this one go. Yep. It just really at that moment, we were both tired. It was hot. It was we cleaned this one, let it go. Sure don't want to waste one.
No, you definitely don't. I mean, I think the last time I saw them in the store, they're actually like 21 or 22 bucks a pound.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Crazy.
And it's really nice white meat, wonderful to eat. Pick any recipe, just not one with a lot of spices. Mild spices, mild flavoring, because you want to taste this fish.
Yeah, it's worth it.
So I don't know how ones in the store would be. I don't know.
I don't know if they farm raise them or not. I'm not sure.
I don't know what they do with them, but I live in Southwest Florida. I can go out and get one a couple times a year.
You're a little spoiled, so I mean,
never considered buying it. You know,
right.
I didn't even know they sold it. So, let's see. Predators on the top, other predators on the bottom. Now, something's been going on here the last few years. We're seeing more and more and more of, and that's one type of fish near the surface: jack, Spanish mackerel, bonita. And right below them, we see jacks back on the flats. And they're just busting bait up, going everywhere. And right underneath them, redfish. Schools of redfish. Then you get out in the middle of the harbor, you got Spanish mackerel hitting. There might be ladyfish or sharks or whatever underneath them. And then you go out in the Gulf of Mexico, you got bonita blitzing all over. And there's blackfin tuna underneath them. And maybe other fish.
Yeah, it's a strange mix. I mean, it doesn't.
Did you understand what I meant, RJ?
I did.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. We've talked about it during different shows, but it really just started to hit me how common this is being. Robert was talking about redfish, and I said, well, I'm hearing the guys, you know, complaining they can't get through the jacks to get to the redfish. And I don't know what's going on with that.
You know, all I can think is you got these predators along the top that are fast-moving fish, and they chop things up. You know, they're not swallowing the minnow whole; they're biting through it.
And they're stunning some.
Because and so that's dropping down below them, and they're picking that stuff up. You know, reds aren't particularly great with their eyesight, and they're not very quick when they come to grab something. You know, where you got mackerel that are moving at light speed. So it looks like it's going to work together pretty well. The mackerel are going to knock all this stuff a little further down. And, of course, what's above them in the air are all the terns and gulls.
Yeah, the birds are feeding above them. You've got this school of fish. Let's say it's jackrabble, and they're just busting the surface, tearing everything up, and they're stunning some baits because they go to hit it, but they bang it instead of actually bite it. And then pieces are falling down, stunned fish. Birds come in from the top, and then these other fish are coming underneath. and it's several different species doing the feeding. It could be ladyfish, could be jacks, could be mackerel, could be bonita. There, any of the schooling fish are possible, but it seems like when one species is very actively feeding, underneath them something is passively feeding.
It's almost like a, what is that, a symbiotic relationship, yes, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're working off of, you know, one's working and benefiting off the other one working. Sounds like a county job sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know.
We're doing all the work, paying the bills, and they're sitting there enjoying it.
Yeah. You know, it's just kind of bizarre to see it happening more and more. You know, it's always been kind of known with some of the different pelagic fish offshore with bonita, for example, and tuna being behind them, but to see it happening more on the flats also.
Well, this is going on in 3 feet of water.
Yeah.
Not just 80 or 100 or 30 or whatever, but in 3 feet of water we're seeing this. And that's where it started to blow my mind. That
I'm wondering if that holds the bait fish into that place in between, or it forces the bait fish up to the surface. And you know, so again, a redfish isn't going to do well surface feeding. I mean, they can, but they're not adept at it.
Well, it could be there's not quite as much bait around, not quite as much food. So, you know, you've got one. It's like, okay, all right, they're feeding. Well, this is cool. I can go in here where maybe, you know, 30 years ago, this wasn't something they actually had to do. There was more of a diversity of food. Maybe a little bit of food shortages are forcing them to be more economical with what they do.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Well, they got to survive, so I mean, they're definitely going to change their habits at times where they have to. You know, if not, they would starve to death pretty much and have mm-hmm. to move on. Yeah.
But can you think of any other reason this would become more and more of an occurrence? Fish have always done this, don't get me wrong, but over the last few years, this is becoming commonplace. Or maybe nobody ever noticed it before. Maybe nobody really talked about it. They just, okay, we caught this and we caught that. But nowadays...
Yeah, just never gave it a second thought and try to put a correlation together.
Well, so many people, they want this fish. Like, those guys were complaining because they wanted redfish. And they were complaining because they had to catch Jack Crevel to get a redfish here and there. So they were upset they had to, you know, mess with the jacks to get the redfish. And you think people were just a little more laid back and, well, heck, I'm at catching jacks, having fun. Look at there, I got a redfish every once in a while. But now they're more, I want a redfish. And if I don't get a redfish, I'm not putting up with these stinking Jack Crevel, you know, because I want my redfish. You know, that could be the other. It could be literally just, you know, people have got a different attitude. When I was a kid, you never drove 80 miles an hour down the interstate 10 feet off of somebody's bumper while you're texting. It was just unheard of, unthinkable. And now, if they're not 10 feet off each other's bumpers, they get itchy and antsy. You know, it's like, I'm not going fast enough. I'm not close enough to that car. Well, I think at 60 miles an hour, you go 44 feet per second. So if you're 80 feet behind another car, you're going to be there in 2 seconds anyway. You really don't have 2 seconds to spare? Or do you just don't like your family?
A little bit of both.
Okay. Well, it's a good way to get rid of them.
I don't think people put it with much thought. They just do it. You know, it's autopilot.
And could that be what's happening with the fish, that they're just becoming more, this is what I want, and why do I have to do this to get what I want?
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. I mean, honestly, because of what we've seen in the last 10 years with bait fish, I think they're learning how to try to have to work off of one another to be able to survive a little bit better, because bait fish have been tough over the last several years. This year just happens to be a pretty good exception to what's happening out there between the glass minnows and the white bait and the thread fins. The only thing that's still kind of missing out there is the pinfish.
Well, RJ, what do you think? You think people are just more whiny, or you think it's more economy and eating? We're banding together to survive.
I'm going to go with Robert. Is that the fish species are going to be adaptable, and there it has been less bait, and once they get a behavior going, they pretty much stick with it. So the increase or decrease in bait fish over the course of a single year won't make much difference. But I've been hearing that same thing, too, that there's fish underneath fish.
Okay. Well, glad you guys think I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You know, you got to come up with a hypothesis here or there.
Well, that's how you try to figure things out and become better anglers. You got to...
So also, how often do we get to call Frank wrong? Come on.
Hey, I'm good with it.
Take your shot.
Mark it on the calendar.
That's right. All take right. your
Doesn't
shot.
Happen very often.
Snook
yes.
and redfish. Along the beaches or up in the harbor?
Mostly in the intercoastal. Intercoastal and in the lower end of the harbor from, say, Pirate Harbor all the way down through Matlachet, the lower part of the West Wall all through Turtle Bay, and then getting some pretty decent reports all the way through the Inglewood area up above the Tom Adams Bridge heading towards Manasota Beach. Up on the backside of it, along the intercoastal, you know. So it's been pretty an impressive activity going on. And the redfish are getting smaller. There's still a few bigger bull reds around, but the majority of them now seem to be in that 18 to 25 inch range. But the snook are all over the map, from 12 inchers all the way up to 35 inchers, and you'll catch one snook and one redfish in the same spot under the bush. And then you move down a little bit, and then it's just snook right there in that spot, and then the next spot is just redfish. So they're kind of intermingling together and being separate at the same time, depending on which bush or piling you happen to cast to.
Let's drop back and punt over for extra point with freshwater.
Bass fishing. A lot of guys are bass fishing right now. Most of them are using live shiners, but the soft plastics have been... It's been so blooming warm, and then we've had some pretty darn good rains where some of the culvert pipes have been flushing again. Some of the little spill dams have been flushing a little bit. So one guy's buying a frog, another guy's buying a spinner bait, and then a couple guys have been... talking about, I haven't seen one buy one yet, but that new Strike King, that it's like cricket or noisy cricket, I don't know, it looks like a weird chatterbait, and it's an expensive little bugger, but there's been a bunch of guys talking about that. And then the topwater bite also, I mean, it's the bass just don't know what to do. It wouldn't surprise me, you know, to take anything out there and catch them on it.
Yeah, so whether it's old or new,
yeah.
Give it a shot. The best advice we can give as far as bass fishing goes is if you feel the heat, I would probably put something on that's going to go deep. So once you feel the heat, go deep, because that the fish are feeling the same thing. Sun's radiating in the water. They're going to go deep to get to cooler water. They're going to go shady, under the weeds, down to deep. Those are your two choices. If you've got some cloud cover, a little bit of, you know, you can be standing there and it's very hot, then all of a sudden you get these clouds going over. At that point, you might want to switch to a topwater, because as soon as that sun isn't beating on the water so hard, those fish are going to go, hey, wow, what's this? And right. They're going to be looking up more. The clouds block that UV light. Fish don't have eyelids. They can't squint. But once there's a cloud there, they can look up well. And so if it's bright and sunny, I'm going to go deep. And soft plastics, Texas rigged, Florida rigged, bottom bouncing, or working right up into the heavy cover, the more shade they have, the better they're going to be. But once you get a cloud going by, I'm going to make that quick switch over to topwater, and I'm just going to really enjoy that cloud cover bite, because that's going to be the most fun. So there's your kind of scenario. Are we hearing anything about the bluegills?
Not too much.
Mayans, anything?
The tilapia have been starting to bite a little bit better. I mean, guys are buying a few wigglers and going out and catching some of the tilapia. And then Teddy was in yesterday, obviously,
Memorial for my dad.
And he's like by far the best crappie fisherman around, and he said he's going to go peek.
There was another
weekend.
Person there who was, you know, who was wonderful, but, you know, really, and Teddy is the king of crappie fishing.
Yes, he is.
I don't care who you are or where you go. Once they figure out it's crappie season, they're starting to bite, they all want to figure out what he's driving. And then it looks like a wedding or a funeral procession, because every time he starts driving, they all fall in behind him trying to figure out where he catches all these crappie. He's an amazing guy.
Yeah.
Literally one of the nicest people on the planet.
Yeah. So he said he's going to go out this weekend and take a peek around and see if anything's starting to cooperate. He said it's still too warm for them to be in good numbers, but he wants to start kind of...
Look for a scrawny white guy in a Prius. That'll be him.
Yeah, if you see a Prius parked by a pond, grab your rod, get out there.
Scrawny white guy. Easy spotting him. Redheaded.
Nice.
Another color. Tip from the Fish and Frank radio show.
Yeah.
Black guy with arms like my legs, man. He's literally one of my favorite people on the planet.
Yeah, he's amazing.
But scrawny white guy with red hair. You'll know that's him.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. We only got, a minute or two left?
You got two to go.
Two to go. Okay. So watch for schools of jacks busting. If you want to find some nice schools of redfish, watch for the jacks. I'm going to strongly urge quarter-ounce jigs, 3/8-ounce jigs. Bucktails are fine. Something with a crawdad tail is real good, too. And bottom bounce, once you see the jacks, the reason for the heavier leadhead, you want it to get past the jacks as fast as possible. And then start bottom bouncing them for the redfish. And only give about a 6-inch lift to the rod. You don't need it to come up a foot, foot and a half off the bottom. That's where the jacks are. We're talking 3 feet of water. You want to stay within 6-8 inches of the bottom. That's where you're going to mostly find those redfish down in there. Good luck with that one. Sharks from Cape Hayes all the way out to the pass. A lot of sharks right now. Bonnets, black tips. Anything else really blasting it out there?
No, the bonnet heads are starting to really perk up really well. So the guys who don't want to target the big sharks but want to just have fun with the little stuff.
Take your trout fishing rods out, your bass fishing rods, your crappie rods, and go catch bonnet sharks. Because if you got a crappie rod and you hook a 3-foot bonnet on it, you're going to have one amazing time.
Absolutely.
So, Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and in the chromed, golden, gleaming towers of power, RJ in command and control. Thanks for listening, boys and girls. We'll catch you on the next one.